It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We continue our Friday program with our weekly politics roundtable. As usual, here to help us make sense of what's happening in Washington is Linda Kenyon, who covers Washington politics in our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. Because she has other commitments during our live show today, I spoke with her earlier this morning. Linda, good to talk with you again.
Well, I'm glad to be back, Brian.
So Congress is back as well this week, back in session after the August recess. Everybody getting back into the swing of things? What's been happening in D.C.?
Well, there's kind of a logjam going on in D.C. right now. The Senate came back on Monday, but the House isn't back until next Monday. And where the House is responsible for starting all of the spending bills and the clock is ticking toward the end of the current fiscal year, the Senate is kind of sort of waiting around, doing other things, working on their own versions of spending bills in case they don't like the House versions, and waiting for the House to pass out all of the 12 annual appropriations bills and send them to the Senate. The current fiscal year will end on the last day of September, and if there is no deal on funding the federal government, there will either be a government shutdown or a vote on a short-term spending bill to carry over until all of the spending bills can be passed. And that short-term spending bill has created a little bit of a headache in the House, where House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has been wrestling with members of his own party who do not want a continuing resolution, which would continue funding at current levels. They want major spending cuts, and that's going to be a hard thing to do in a continuing resolution. So we're going to see a showdown between now and the end of the month.
I feel like we've been through this story before many times in slightly different versions, more recently with some of the debt ceiling fights and negotiations, but also these threats of government shutdowns and, in fact, actual government shutdowns.
Yes, we have indeed. And you are correct. We have been through this. In fact, it's interesting that you mentioned the debt ceiling negotiations. There was some major concern about ruining the full faith and credit of the U.S. Financial system by not passing the debt ceiling so the U.S. could continue to pay its bills. And that led to an agreement between Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy and the President of the United States Joe Biden to cut spending to a certain amount in order to raise the debt ceiling. And so as we go into the end of the year scramble to avoid a government shutdown, Kevin McCarthy is now finding himself in a bit of a pickle because members of his own party, the extreme right of his party, members of the House Freedom Caucus, are saying, yeah, the debt ceiling bill did pass, but we didn't like it. And so we don't want to agree to continue the spending parameters that were set forth in the debt ceiling bill. We want further cuts. So this is a big problem for House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. While over in the Senate, Senate Republicans are saying, we don't want a government shutdown. Nobody wants a government shutdown. And so they're at odds with the members of their party on the other side of the U.S. Capitol complex.
You know, the division among Republicans is so interesting. And I wonder, you know, you think back to the Tea Party, and that was sort of really strong fiscal conservatives. You had the Young Guns sort of rising to prominence at that time, the group of young Republican lawmakers, of whom Kevin McCarthy was one and maybe one of the few remaining members who sort of made fiscal conservatism their hallmark. The group of powerful Freedom Caucus members in the Republican Conference now seem to have other priorities other than just tightening fiscal spending. There has been realignments within the caucus, right?
There certainly have. And these realignments are more along the lines of, well, of course, as you rightly point out, not just fiscal conservatism, but social conservatism. And a lot of the provisions that they support are not supported by the moderate Republicans in the House, while over in the Senate, not really supported as much over there either. So they are trying to steer the ship, if you will, and they have been given the rudder by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy himself. Because as you may recall, it took multiple ballots in the House of Representatives to elect him as Speaker of the House. and he needed the support of the House Freedom Caucus in order to do that. They gave him that support after making him suffer through 15 balloting rounds, but he did get it. But in exchange, what he gave them was the ability to remove him from the speakership with just a situation where they could just call for what amounts to a vote of no confidence. Only takes one member to call for this vote of no confidence to remove him from his speakership. And he's very mindful of that. So he's got himself painted into a corner here where he wants to do the business of the House, but he also needs to keep in mind that if he doesn't do the business according to the desires of the House Freedom Caucus, he's out.
Yes, a fighter pilot who's given remote control over his ejector switch to all of his colleagues. You know, speaking of social conservatism, you had a report this week on something that Senator Tommy Tuberville of, I believe it's Alabama, has been doing for a long time, holding up military promotions. What is his endgame there?
Yeah, this is a very interesting situation. He's holding up military promotions and confirmations in the U.S. Senate. He's a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. As a member of the minority in the U.S. Senate, there are several rights that they have that are not the same in the House. They operate under completely different rules. And so he has put the abortion issue at the forefront. He does not like a Pentagon policy that allows the Pentagon to pay for travel expenses for members of the military or their family members who may need to travel outside their duty station in order to seek reproductive health care. In this case, it could include abortions. Tommy Tuberville is a very strong pro-life senator, and he does not want the Pentagon to be involved in abortion policy at all. But I will point out, and your own home state senator, Tammy Duckworth, has pointed out repeatedly, incidentally, also a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee and a combat veteran, she says the Pentagon is not paying for abortions. It is illegal for federal money to be used to pay for abortions. The Pentagon is paying for travel expenses, and that the members of the military, many of whom are women, or, for example, perhaps a spouse of a military member, have the same rights as other Americans. And if they need to get reproductive health care and they can't get it where they are stationed, then they can travel to another state to get that care. And Tommy Tuberville says, nope, that's just not acceptable. And Tammy Duckworth says, yes, it is acceptable. And how are we supposed to retain and recruit women or family members of male service members if we don't allow them to get health care like we do for civilians?
You know, the among the nominations being held up, I noticed, was Admiral Lisa Franchetti, who is President Biden's nominee to be the next Chief of Naval Operations. This is the top commissioned officer in the Navy and a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It's notable for two reasons, I think. In the nearly 250-year history of the Navy, Admiral Franchetti would be the first woman in the role. And she also, closer to home for those of us in Illinois, she got her commission after going through the Naval ROTC program at Northwestern University. It's interesting and worth noting, I think, here, you mentioned the minority. This is just one person, though. This is not even the entire Republican Party group within the U.S. Senate. This is one individual senator holding up all military promotions here.
Yeah. And these are some very high ranking promotions that are being held up. Lisa Franchetti being your Illinois connection. Yes, she is one of them. And she would be in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Currently, she is the vice chair serving in the U.S. Navy, the Navy's vice chief admiral. And so she is being held up as well. Now, we also have the chairman of the other top three military agencies that are being held up as well. And for the first time, as Senator Tammy Duckworth pointed out, in 100 years, there is no Marine Corps commandant. So the first time the three services have been working under acting heads, and now among them, no Marine Corps commandant. And that is because Tommy Tuberville is continuing to hold up these promotions and these confirmations. So this is a one-man blockade. It's been going on for 6 months now. It's over abortion care, which is not what is going on here, according to Senator Tammy Duckworth and your other home state senator, Senator Richard Durbin, who calls this whole situation the example of the Senate at its worst. And he calls it both dangerous and insulting to treat military service members in this fashion. So this is something that I can't imagine will end anytime soon, because Senator Tuberville has got to find a way out of this pickle, if you will. And it's hard to see how he could do that and still save face.
Well, we know you will be there to report on it if he does figure his way out. Linda Kenyon covers Washington for Illinois Public Media. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we turn now to state politics and government. And for that, we're joined live by Peter Hancock. He's a State House reporter at Capital News Illinois. Peter, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Good to be here, Sean.
So, Peter, we are coming to the end of a week that began with Labor Day. You had a story pegged to a report on how labor is doing here in Illinois. What are some of the big takeaways from that?
Well, overall in Illinois, the total number of union members, working union members, has declined, but it actually grew nationwide. And I think that was the first time that had happened in quite some time. So, you know, generally speaking, the labor movement is still pretty healthy here in Illinois with the passage of the Workers' Rights Amendment last year. That guarantees people the right to organize and collectively bargain. But I think, you know, nationally, there has been kind of a decline that is attributable to a lot of things, the decline of the manufacturing industry and the Rust Belt, and also shrinking state and local government budgets. I mean, the public sector is really accounts for a large portion of overall union membership in the United States and in Illinois. And as there is political pressure for governments to be leaner and more efficient and to hold down taxes, and also just that governments are having a hard time filling positions generally, we've seen a decline there. And so that's been a big challenge for labor.
Yeah. And I, you know, I should have said this earlier. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, reminding our listeners we are talking in our weekly political roundtable. We talked about Washington. Now we're talking about what's happened in Illinois. And we're talking with Peter Hancock of Capital News Illinois. So, I mean, so there's this uptick that labor was sort of like trumpeting last year. It still comes amid this broader secular decline in union membership. And that doesn't seem to have necessarily turned around, right?
Yeah. And I think one of the things that the authors of this report that I was writing about that gave them hope, it's from a couple of very pro-union organizations. One of the things that gave them hope and they thought saw as leading indicators of a resurgence was a rise in the number of successful petitions to organize labor unions. Not only number of petitions, but number of successful petitions. And so they think that that is an indicator of sort of a renewal of the labor movement as we see, you know, people trying to organize unions in sort of non-traditional union places like Amazon and Starbucks and places like that. So, you know, maybe that the union movement is spreading outside of the traditional manufacturing and service industry into some other sectors of the economy.
You know, and I think maybe perhaps related to that is you reported some interesting stats about the changing demographics of who is in unions or who's trying to organize unions these days. I was surprised by a few things in there. What jumped out at you?
The fact that it's getting younger, the union population is getting younger, I found really interesting. You know, for a long time, we've kind of thought of union members as older people who are still left in the manufacturing industry, maybe teachers, educators, people like that. But yeah, the fact that the it's the younger segments of the population where the unionization rate is growing.
And more educated as well, which I think that's part of the story we've seen in state government too, with a lot of, you know, even people who are attorneys and have master's degrees becoming union members.
People with master's degree, yeah. Of course, remember, you know, a lot of teachers have master's degrees, and the teaching profession nationwide is pretty highly unionized. So I think that accounts for a lot of it.
No, that's a good point there. So how does Illinois compare to the rest of the country when it comes to its union membership?
Well, I think Illinois actually has, I think it ranks in the top five in terms of total union membership. Of course, we're the fifth largest state, so that might make sense. But there are other large states, Wisconsin, Indiana, you know, industrialized states that have enacted right to work laws. Also, Wisconsin's state government has really limited the ability of public sector unions, you know, what they can negotiate for. Iowa has enacted some pretty strict laws. So, you know, especially if you look around our neighbors, with the exception of Missouri, most of our neighbors have really restrictive labor laws when it comes to unionization.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. Peter Hancock covers state politics and government for Capital News Illinois, a nonprofit news organization that serves newspapers and now public media stations across the state. Peter, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you, Sean. Good to be here.
And listeners, once again, I want to remind you, we love hearing what you think about what we have talked about here on the 21st show. You can always let us know what you think by emailing anytime, day or night. talk@21stshow.org is our address, talk@21stshow.org. Or you can give us a call on our voicemail line anytime, day or night, 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. You can find that, all the ways to contact us, all on our website. 21stshow.org. While you're there, find a link to subscribe to our podcast, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. Search for The 21st Show. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Please stay with us.